Good evening. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's Speak Up Arkansas. We're going to be talking today about the upcoming executions in Arkansas. This issue has gotten a lot of national and international attention. It forces us all to look closely and examine our feelings and beliefs about the death penalty and where, if any place, it fits into our sense of justice in America. I hope to have a meaningful and respectful discussion about this topic today, and I want our listeners to know that we contacted the Attorney General's office and the Governor's office to ask to provide a panel member for today's panel. They both declined. We also reached out to the Prosecutor Coordinator's office to provide a prosecutor, which they did. But unfortunately, Nathan Smith, the elected prosecutor from Benton County, who planned to join us by phone today, had a death in the family of one of his staff and cannot be with us. So we invite listeners to call if they want to voice your opinion. If you want to voice your opinion on this matter, just know that you can call here at 501-433-0088, or you can send us an email, a question or a comment to speakupar@gmail.com. I want to invite our panel. We have a great panel to discuss this today. We have Reverend Ruskin Falls, who's pastor at Pulaski Heights Presbyterian Church. We have Feronda Bradsfield, the director of the Arkansas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And we have Judith Elaine, a family member of a murder victim. And we also have John Hall, a criminal defense attorney who has actually defended death row inmates in his long career as a criminal defense attorney. And he is here with us. And we're going to hear from them real quickly. I wanted to invite. I want to thank all of you all for being here, and I'm looking forward to the discussion today. So, I want to ask though before we get started, and this is just for the group, I guess. What do you think makes Arkansans so supportive of the death penalty? What is it that about the, what is it about Arkansas and folks, why is it that they support the death penalty, I think, more than 50% at least here in Arkansas? Anybody want to respond to that?
Who knows why? I would say it's not religion, unless you want to say it goes back to eye for an eye. But if the Bible says thou shalt not kill, doesn't that also apply to the state? Right. Should it not also apply to the state? And what do we prove by keeping somebody on death row for 20 years or more? Right. And possibly the best example of this that I've seen, and I won't use a name. I mean, they'll spare him. But he was in the newspaper. His mother was a murder victim. He was a lawyer. And he could not go to his mother's grave until after the person who killed her was actually executed. He could not put her death behind him because there was no finality.
Right.
Life without parole is final. Unless the guy succeeds in escaping, which is highly unlikely, he's going to be there. Now, Mr. Williams, he escaped from Department of Corrections, and he killed after he escaped. That's a problem. That can happen. But people who get life without parole are going to do life without parole. And there is no difference in Arkansas law between life imprisonment and life without parole. The reason why the statute says that is so the jury knows when they read the verdict form that it means life without parole. It's not like in California, where life means you come up before the parole board like Charlie Manson does every 4 years or whatever, because you're technically possibly eligible for parole. But there is no parole in Arkansas, even for a life sentence. You have to have it commuted to a term of years by the governor. Mm-hmm. And why we just don't get rid of the death penalty, I don't understand. It leaves the families, watching the agony of the families on TV, but they're talking to the parole board. They can't put it behind them because it's not final. The state did not make it final by seeking the death penalty and having it drag out for so long.
Right.
And that's the nature of the litigation. It's those of us who do that work, we fight like hell for these guys to keep them alive, to try and frustrate the system of trying to execute them. Yeah, they did the crime, almost certainly. They did the crime, almost always. Unlike Texas, which has executed probably five people who turned out to be actually innocent, which is another big mistake of the death penalty. Arkansas has not had that yet, except possibly with Eccles. He was on death row. He claimed actual innocence. Finally, they were able to get him a new trial. But that's the closest we've come to actually having an actual innocence, a provable actual innocent
right.
person
right.
go to death. But Texas, we know of, have done five.
Can I chime in? As far as you know, why it's not been more challenged, I think it's just because it is accepted. I think if someone could do a kind of a history on death penalty, on executions in Arkansas, that would be a good thing. Dave Rickard made a good start at that. I read a good book by a lawyer in Kentucky, Carl Wedekind, on the history of the death penalty and killing in Kentucky. And you can see how things just get established in a way that they're taken for granted as natural, to the point that folks are intimidated or anxious about even challenging it, so they just don't speak up. And it just, you have to chip away at things like that as best you can, as long as you can, and things swing. It's not necessarily for good reasoned arguments or even sound emotions. It's just there.
And I definitely want to echo the comments that were made before. I think that Arkansans are poorly educated on the death penalty and what it does and what it doesn't do. I have conversations every day with people that hold these longstanding myths about the death penalty. I had a conversation outside of a piano store on Main Street just a few minutes ago, and the guy said to me, well, you know, we should just go, there's no reason we should pay to keep them in jail. We're spending too much money. We should just execute them. And I let him know, you know, the death penalty or seeking a death sentence actually costs more money than a final life without parole sentence. A lot of Arkansans don't know that. A lot of Arkansans think that it deters crime, and even our governor has said that publicly. And most studies show that it does not deter crime. I think about 88% of criminologists believe that it doesn't deter crime. So there are so many myths that are held by people, and I think that the more that we are able to educate people in Arkansas and throughout the country, the more that we can turn the tide on the support for the death penalty.
Right. I read the editorial by John Brumman in the paper, and he recalled his first talk before the abolished the death penalty group was the same day as the Oklahoma City bombing, and his pointed out that that was his first reaction. I mean, it is a first reaction to a horrible thing to wish something poorly on the person who did it. I think that's all part of it. But working past that is something that I guess folks have to come to grips with. But John, could you talk a little bit? You've had clients on death row. You've probably experienced executions, and just talk to us a little bit about. I can't imagine how busy those guys are out there. Jeff and those other folks are right now dealing with all of this. And I think when I talked to you, you said it was a grueling process to be able to defend folks like this.
The trial itself is really taxing because it takes a year or more to get ready for trial.
Yeah.
And it does cost a fortune. Let me digress to that for a second. I don't know what the current cost is, but Florida had an analysis in the late 90s that it cost $750,000 to keep an inmate for life, but it cost $2.5 million to execute them because of the cost of the lawyers, the litigation, the courts, how long it takes to go through that process. Death row costs more to keep somebody on than a regular prison cell. And that's in 1998 dollars. I should pull a number out of the air. Right. That was 20 years ago. Yeah. It was $2.5 million. So what is it now? Is it $5 million today? It costs around $24,000 a year to keep an inmate in prison. So 40 years times 24,000 is a little less than $1 million. The cost of housing a violent person who needs to be off the street, because yeah. you don't know what he's going to do. Anybody who would commit that horrific a crime probably is a risk to society. It's a serious risk to society. Yeah. There are other people in prison doing life that aren't, because they committed a crime of passion. It's a one-time occurrence in their life. Right. They're doing life as well, probably. Mm-hmm. Why, I don't know, but that's what the jury decided. We're a jury sentencing state. If the death penalty deterred homicide, then why doesn't Texas have a lower homicide rate? They've executed more people than anybody. Their death penalty is on the wane. The favorability of the death penalty in polls has been dropping year by year, and it's now down below or close to 50% or below. It's been a while since I've seen the statistics. But I got out of death penalty work because it's still very grueling. And I still get my continuing education in death penalty just in case that I have to help somebody. Mm-hmm. But the guys that undertook this civil case, they had to drop everything they're doing as soon as the governor set a date. They had to decide, we're going to file this lawsuit, we're going to have to find these witnesses. And they drew a very thoughtful judge. Of course, all our federal bench here is outstanding compared to some other states. They're all very good. But they got Judge Baker, who's willing to give them 4 days to try this case. And that means they had to scramble to get ready. They had to file the pleadings, they had to locate their witnesses, they had to get them here, and then get them on the stand. And the state had to have an opportunity to talk to their witnesses, too, so they could bring their own case forward. But if this is in the injunctive stage, then they just have to show that they're probably going to win for a preliminary injunction. Not that they can win, or essentially that they can win. Not that they did, but they're showing enough of an ability to show their case. And from just my observations from the outside, just based on TV reports and Arkansas Times reports, that I think they proved their case that the particular drug cocktail they've got now itself is cruel and unusual, because two other courts have so held. And it'd be easy for Judge Baker just to say, I agree with the other courts based on the record they provided me. And this could very well be the exact same witnesses that testified in those other cases. Uh-huh. Because the anti-death penalty legal forces are consistent, coherent, together on this. And it's easy to find somebody that'll come in and testify. You got to find the guy. And of course, as soon as we announced we're going to execute eight people, I'm sure people started calling right away, saying, I want in. I want to help to yeah. stop this travesty.
Right. Well, and we've had multiple executions before. So what? Well, let's hear from a caller here. Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, got it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I was listening to your program, and I just wanted to urge all the folks who are really upset about the planned executions to speak up and let their voices be heard. There are folks that are keeping vigil at the governor's mansion between 4:30 and 6:30 every day of the week. We invite folks to come down and let their voices be heard. Just make a presence here and let the governor know how we feel about the death penalty. And also, there's a rally at the Capitol on Friday starting at 1:30. And we urge as many folks to come out as possible. The more voices that are heard, the more perhaps our government officials will take notice and take our concern to heart.
And hopefully the national press will be there to show that some people in Arkansas are actually not on board with this conveyor belt to the death penalty.
Right.
Yes, I agree. I think that's what it takes. So that's all I really wanted to say. I'm enjoying listening to the program.
All right. Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
I want to put in, this is Judith, that it won't be just the national press. There will be international press. There already has been international presence here.
Just while we're on the topic of costs, make the point, I mean, what some people, the initial thought is, well, these lawyers are making a lot of money, and the answer to the cost problem is to move faster from death sentence to death, to execution. And I think the point needs to be made that if this is the penalty that is the most severe penalty in this country, you cannot, in combination with that, say, oh, and by the way, we're going to cut back appeals processes and so forth. You've got to allow for as much as possible. And so these expenses, you can't avoid them if we're going to continue to carry out the processes in a just way.
Right. Well, in 1996, the federal habeas law was changed, effective 1 year later, April of 1997. And it was a response to the Oklahoma City bombing directly because it was mentioned on the floor of Congress. But the statute's called, to us, AEDPA, A-E-D-P-A. It's Anti-Terrorism Effective Death Penalty Enforcement Act. And it's just so bizarre that it cuts back essentially your rights as a habeas corpus litigant because it narrows your avenue of relief considerably. And it'll be the effective part, April of 97, is 20 years old this month. And it was like 26th of April, I believe, the effective date. It was passed with 1 year to go into effect. So everybody was on notice. So anybody that wasn't in the process could get started. It was at least some semblance of fairness to give them an opportunity to get into court. But anybody that's happened since that date has narrowed habeas review, but still death penalty litigation is so complex and so convoluted that it just drags out. And it drags out because it's the ultimate penalty. You can't turn back from that mistake if you've executed the wrong guy or a completely innocent, not just like the is it Willingham? Is that the case out of Texas I'm thinking of? That was an accidental fire, but it was treated as an arson. His daughter died in the fire, or his family died, and he was prosecuted for capital murder, and it turned out it really was accidental. But after they didn't find that out until after he was dead. A lot of good that does. But that's serious blood on your hands to kill an innocent person for what was not even a crime to begin with. Here, at least, with the Arkansas homicides, they are all shooting deaths, I believe, and there's not a question on any of these guys about actual innocence. I think one of them may have raised it during his clemency proceeding, but your best bet may be clemency for actual innocence if you got a sensitive governor. And as Judge Marshall said in the post-conviction, or excuse me, the clemency process is imperfect at best. And it is. It's very imperfect. But to cram eight of them into 6 weeks, it makes it impossible for the courts. That's why one case is filed in Judge Marshall's court, and he grants that relief. Then another case is filed with on other issues, and then lands in Judge Baker's court. She's having a hearing. And I've been wondering why the state did not appeal the one grant of, or the one that Judge Marshall granted. Why have they not appealed that to the Eighth Circuit? When I was last in the Eighth Circuit, which was after this fiasco started, the clerk said, are you involved in any of these? Because we got people, we're going to have people on standby to deal with the appeals that come up here, because they invariably do. Mm-hmm. Because if Judge Baker grants relief on Friday, and I think she's going to, and remember, I'm an outsider to this. I haven't been watching the proof. I haven't been sitting there. But from what I've been able to ascertain, it sounds like she's going to have to grant relief, say that they made enough of a showing to stop this. And when she does that, the state's going to immediately appeal, and then a panel of three judges in St. Louis is going to decide whether or not to overturn it on short notice, literally just on the papers in hours. It's so bizarre. Because they won't have a record ready. She's going to take 4 days of testimony, grant relief, and then they can say, well, you're wrong. They can't say she's wrong. They got to at least grant the stay or continue the stay. Say, okay, we're going to decide this in the normal course of business now, not in a week, not in 4 days, not in 2 days. Regular course of business, file briefs, and we'll take it up. And, of course, if they do that, they get past the expiration date of the drugs, which is why this is so important to them. And that drug is so toxic, it's scary. The thought of ever being injected with that's got to be horrible.
For Rhonda, you want to...
I think that the time and the habeas appeals, all of that makes a very good point. The there have been 157 exonerations from death row, with the most recent coming just in February of this year. I think the average time for those exonerees, on their time on death row, was about 11 years. So it's appropriate to have enough time to litigate these issues and to go through the appeals process, because it's proven and proven and proven that we can get it wrong. And when it's human life that we're dealing with, I don't think that there's an acceptable error rate.
Reverend Falls, what's your perspective on this whole thing, and where you sit and in front of your congregation or in your study, whatever?
Well, I mean, we have in our Sunday school class that I'm leading, well, this is the issue that we are talking about right now. And people know where I stand on it, that I'm for abolishing the death penalty. That doesn't mean everybody in the class sees it my way. It's a lively class, a lively discussion, a lot of good give and take on it. But, yeah, I'm opposed to the death penalty. I mean, I agree with all the arguments in terms of it. It costs a whole lot more to pursue a death penalty as a sentence. It seems to me that all the studies indicate that it does not deter the way some would like to see. The wrong convictions, the inequality with which it's assigned, the small number of folks. I mean, it's not really like the worst of the worst are the ones who are get the death penalty. If you look at who doesn't, go through a list of cases, those who got the death penalty and those who didn't. The reasons are just there's not a real good standard there to work from. There's some certain arbitrariness. At the same time, those are practical arguments. You can argue against those. I mean, just because something is, I mean, war is more expensive than peace, but that doesn't necessarily mean you should never go to war. Even if it doesn't deter, that's not necessarily an argument against the death penalty. You can say, okay, we've got all these wrongful convictions. It's not, there's inequality in how it's handed out. And you could say, well, that's just the system. But I think if you do read the cases where the innocent are executed and the unfairness involved in assigning the death penalty, it's gut-wrenching. So there's all that. And I do think a point that needs to be made is that the practice of executing criminals has a brutalizing effect on us as a society. And when we punish by death, we're assailing the very thing that we, at our most compassionate best, know that we should defending. And when this becomes our socially sanctioned way of dealing with already what you might call chain-bound criminals, an element of barbarism, I think that's fair to say, an element of barbarism has gotten a foothold among us.
Okay. I want to remind everybody, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. This is a live broadcast. You can call in at 501-433-0088. If you're on the shy side, you can just send us an email at speakupar.org@gmail.com. We have a caller. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I was just wanting to put in my two cents. I hear everybody talking about these criminals that are on death row, how much it costs and all that. Nobody has said anything about the victims. I wonder how they feel about these guys that's wasting all this taxpayer money and all that. I mean, it seems to me, let's call it a little cruel, but it wouldn't kill them suckers the same way they killed their victims. It might be worth the money.
All right.
But I just want to put my two cents in. Remember the victims and pray for them, not the damn criminals.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for calling, sir.
I think at the beginning of the program, Mr. Hall talked about victims' families, and one of the points that I always like to make is that we are not doing a service to the victims' families by having the death penalty, by bringing them back and forth to court all the time to relitigate these issues. There is some finality in the life without parole sentence. And what we've done as a society for victims' families, we have tied their closure, we've tied their healing and their grieving to the execution of some other person that, first of all, may or may not happen, and then it's going to take many, many years to happen. And Judith is a murder victim's family member, and she can speak to some of the things that family members need, but I don't think we're providing grief counseling or things of that nature, are we, Judith?
No, we're not. And here in Arkansas, what we offer murder victim families is very little. It's an appeal process through the county prosecutor's office, and you can apply. I didn't mean appeal, I meant application. You can apply, and you can be denied. You wait for the application, you can be denied. And the needs that murder victims have, their families after homicide, are very immediate. Once you've lost a loved one to violence, you go around in a fog for a few days, and you could benefit from very mundane help with very mundane things like keeping up with the bills. And oftentimes people need help with getting their loved one's body released from the hospital, making funeral arrangements, buying the burial plot, or arranging for cremation. There are just lots and lots of immediate needs, and I want to tie into the point about the cost. I just can't help but think that we could be spending that money so much better. And one of the things about the death penalty for family members is it's applied in a very small number of cases, and even those, some of them are overturned on appeal. And when Governor Huckabee says he does this for the families so that they can have closure in their cases, what it says to all the rest of us who never got that is that your family member's death his life wasn't valuable enough to warrant or merit this so-called justice of the death penalty. But there are vast numbers of us out here, then if it's for the victims' families who have been cheated, because we don't get that.
We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I want to thank our panel members who have joined us today. And again, we are broadcast live, so you can give us a call. And we'll take a short break and be right back. Thank you. Again, good evening. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's Speak Up Arkansas. We're here with Reverend Ruskin Fales, a pastor at Pulaski Heights Presbyterian Church, for Rhonda Bradsfield, the director of the Arkansas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, Judith Elaine, a family member of a murder victim, and John Hall, a criminal defense attorney that has represented people on death row in the past. Again, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. We'd like to hear your thoughts about this. I know it's certainly been in the press, and people, it's got to be on people's minds. You can't avoid it, and it seems to be everywhere. So what do you guys think, the impact that this national and international interest in what's going on in Arkansas is going to have on the state of Arkansas?
Well, this is Feronda, and I get calls all day, every day from all over the world. And there's probably not, maybe I haven't gotten a call from Antarctica, but I think that's the only continent that we haven't heard from yet. And so people are here on the ground. They are traveling from all over the world to be here. You know, and when I talk to people who are unfamiliar with Arkansas, one of the things that they pretty much the only thing that they know about this state historically is Little Rock Nine. And so we go from, you know, being known about for a state that didn't want to integrate schools to this, the Arkansas 8 and 10, where we are planning to execute, it was 8, but now it's 7 individuals in the matter of 10 days simply because there's an expiration date looming, and I think this looks horrible.
I want to relate an anecdote from having been in at the gates to the governor's mansion. One day last week, a couple from California were on a self-guided walking tour and came by, and they said, we didn't know there was anybody in Arkansas that was against the death penalty.
Wow.
And the woman was an anesthesiologist, and she stopped and gave us a tutorial on what midazolam is and what it does and does not do. It was interesting.
Right. Well, and that drug has certainly been at the center of that. And again, I think it's that's really the question that's before the judge right now, the case for that and the inappropriate use of that drug. It just seems a little absurd to be doing this because we're running out of the due date. Any other thoughts about Arkansas and this?
Just my wife's from Germany. We have family and friends over there. And just to say, I mean, that this is it has to do with societal and cultural mindsets. I mean, over there, it's not a question of liberal, conservative, and so forth, the law and order, or you just don't care. I mean, people over there just don't understand how we can be executing people. It's just beyond them, no matter what they're where they are on the political spectrum. They're just baffled by all this. So. Again, I think, and we are one of the, we're not in good company as a nation amongst those who actually still do carry out executions. And so I don't think this is going to bode well for us for now if it does happen.
So if, I think this was mentioned a little bit earlier actually by the caller about things that can be done by those who are interested in this issue, and I know that the Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty is probably organizing some of that. So, Feronda, you want to give us a lowdown on what's coming our way? And Next.
Sure. We have a number of events that are happening over the course of the next 2 weeks. Today, we had it was actually planned and coordinated by Reverend Steve Copley, who is the president of the board of directors for the Arkansas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty today. We had a number of clergy to come out and with the press conference to voice their concern about these executions and ask the governor to stop. There was a sign-on letter, and about 206 Arkansas clergy signed that letter to the governor, saying that they are totally opposed to this plan to execute so many people in such a short period of time. So that happened today. On Friday, we will have a rally against the executions. It will begin at 1:30. It's going to be on the Capitol steps. We've got a number of speakers that are going to come out and talk about the death penalty and from a lot of different perspectives. Judith Elaine is going to be one of those speakers, and she will speak about her views on the death penalty as a murder victim's family member. Going into the executions on next week, for Sunday, we will be participating in the community sunrise service, and that service starts at 7 a.m. We're encouraging all members of the community to come out and worship with us at that service. Executions are planned for Monday. Coalition is planning to have a vigil every evening on Mondays and Thursday. We have execution scheduled for the 17th, the 20th, the 24th, and the 27th. And we will have vigils outside of the governor's mansion each one of those evenings. We have an ongoing vigil that is happening right now as we speak. People are at the governor's mansion, and it's ongoing. You can go whenever is convenient for you. We typically encourage people to come around the hours of 4:30 to 6:30. That's usually when we see our peak crowds. We also have there is a group that is hosting a fundraiser to support the work that ACADP is doing, and that will happen at Whitewater Tavern on tomorrow night. It starts at 8:30. There are a few bands that are going to perform, and some like-minded people will get together to support the coalition. It's not something that the coalition has planned specifically, but it is going to support the coalition's work.
Is this the kind of thing that has been successful in other states at bringing attention to this? And I mean, as an organizer in Arkansas, I know you connect with other people in your similar positions across the country. And what's sort of the word there? I mean, I think as John pointed out, are executions going down? Are they becoming less and less widely supported? And are things working that way?
Sure, I think all of that is happening. I think that, I know that support for the death penalty here in Arkansas has gone down. Across the country, it has gone down, and executions were at an all-time low. We hope that we can continue on that pace. Here in Arkansas, we haven't had an execution for 12 years, and so things have been on a downward trend, and I think it's our duty as Arkansans to express to our governor, to express to other Arkansans, and to express to the world that we are opposed to the death penalty, and we are totally against the plan to execute all of these men in a short period of time just simply because we have a drug that we want to use up before it expires.
You know, the caller talked about being aware and sensitive of the needs of the victims of this, and that is a common refrain. I know, Judy, you responded to that with him, but you know, how do state other places best deal with that in a way that helps someone? Because I think closure is really important, and it does take long. It takes different people longer periods of time, but there's a process for getting closure and putting something behind you. And does anybody have any thoughts about any more thoughts about that and the importance of really thinking about that as part of the campaign for that?
Well, if you want closure, then you would be in favor of life in prison, because it eliminates this.
Hello,
ongoing.
You're on the air. Excuse me, Judith.
Yes.
Can you wait a minute? I want Judith to finish her comments, okay? Hang on just a second.
I'm over 50, and my father was murdered when I was 8. And, you know, there's stages that you go through. But after all these years, you know, I heard it was like the Hatfield and McCoy thing in the mountains of North Carolina. And I'm totally against death penalty.
And what brought you to that place?
Well, you know, I think you've got to find some peace. You know, at some point.
Right. Yes. All right. Sir, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you listening.
If I were a prosecutor, I think I would say, I'm not going to charge the man, usually a man, with capital murder. I'm just going to charge him with murder one. It's a little easier to prove. Make the plea offer life. It's the same as life without parole. Let's end this now. Mm-hmm. Plead to life and be done with it. Get this over with so the family doesn't have to testify.
Yes. Have to keep coming back over sometimes a period of decades.
Well, if you watch the Beverly Carter murder case that was on TV a little while ago on Dateline, it's going to be on again on Investigation Discovery if it hadn't already been this week. Aaron Lewis wanted to drag that out because he wanted to go to a federal prison. He wanted them to charge him with federal kidnapping, as best I can tell. And the state said, we're not playing that game. And they waived death. They just charged him with, I can't remember if it was murder one or capital murder, but capital murder is life without or death. If you waive death, because it's hard to get in Pulaski County. Mm-hmm. Now, how long has it been since we've had a death penalty here? I mean, even the Ann Pressley murder didn't result in a death penalty. And she was brutally beaten and hung on for a week before she died.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible crime. He got life, as he deserved. But once that trial happened, it's over. Mm-hmm. And the chances of it being reversed, well, a little bit, not much. But when you go for the death penalty and you get it, you've also increased the odds of a reversal on appeal. Because, as the courts have said over and over again, death is different. And they look more seriously at a death penalty than they do at an average life imprisonment sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes counter to the in that the prosecutors who try to get the toughest thing they can, but
prosecutors also have to take care of the victims.
Right.
And in a sex case, they're quick to say, we don't want the victim to testify, so we'll make you an offer you can't refuse. It'll be a term of years or something like that to keep a child, for instance, from having to testify. But what about the child that watches a parent get killed? That's going to have to testify. They're going to put that child through it again. They're going to relive it as it is, but they're not going to have to talk about it in front of 100 strangers in a courtroom.
Right. Yeah.
A prison sentence would allow for murder victims' families to get on with the healing process. What's happened in these cases that are coming up now? These families have been asked to put their healing process on hold. One of them 17 years, and some of them as long as 30 years.
If there's a trial, there's going to be an appeal. If there's a guilty plea, the chance of the appeal is really slim.
Mm-hmm. Right. Again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're discussing Arkansas's upcoming executions. And do any of the rest of you share John's kind of thoughts or reading that something may happen between now and execution day?
Those are my hopes and prayers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. That's what we hope.
Well, remember, I'm just reading tea leaves, but it's based on what I know their burden of proof is, and based on what the papers are reporting, they've made their case already.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. All right, this is Speak Up Arkansas. Give us a call here. The line's open at 501-433-0088. I'm going to turn my head and check my computer, see if anybody has sent me an email at speakupar@gmail.com. Judith.
One of the points that I would like to make is how the death penalty focuses the attention on the people convicted of the crime rather than on the victims themselves. And this, what's going on right now is a clear demonstration of that. Victims are kind of a sideshow in what's become a global circus with these upcoming executions. And I found out yesterday by talking with someone who is down here from Missouri that in 2013 and 2014 in Missouri, they executed one person a month, or they scheduled executions for one person a month for 24 months. Three of them were not executed. But I didn't hear about that. Wow. But what we are about to do here is being heard around the world. And we're doing it to use a drug that is questionable before it expires.
A point I'd like to make, we talk about these practical considerations, and I agree with that all of these are sound reasons to abolish the death penalty. But costs maybe do or don't matter to folks. Deterrence, what if it did deter, or does that matter? Wrong convictions, inequality and arbitrariness in sentencing. These, you can say, well, these could be corrected. What I would want to help, I hope that we could also learn to focus on is that executions are inherently wrong, aside from all of these practical considerations. Now, for some people, it's in terms of the word that would be used is the sacredness of life. That's not a term, actually, that I'd use that much. But I think when for me and for many, once you learn to see and hear the image of God coming, speaking to you through the face of the other, I think there's something there that makes execution inherently wrong. I think also, I don't know that we have time to get into it now, but I think once you raise the question of what wrongdoers deserve, I don't think that you can carry out an execution. I think you lose all justification for that. Maybe I should have started into that sooner. But,
right.
But
right.
I do think we need to consider the inherent wrongness of executions in addition to all these other considerations.
Okay. All right. This is Speak Up Arkansas on KABF 88.3. Give us the call, 501-433-0088. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this. You know, I watched Moore that does those documentaries, and Michael Moore, and he did one on which country do we invade next. And so what he was doing was traveling to countries that have done things in a much different way than the United States, which he thought were far more progressive. And one of them was, I know it was a Scandinavian country, I don't know which one it was, but their harshest sentence they gave was 21 years. Mm-hmm. Now that doesn't mean they got out of prison, they may have been under supervision, but as far as being actually kept behind locked doors for all that period of time. And when questioned by Michael Moore, of the head of the, I guess, the judiciary for the country, they said, but where did you get this idea of just only giving a 21-year sentence? He said, from the Americans. So, but what idea was that? And he said, y'all are against cruel and unusual punishment. I thought that was sort of apropos for here. It is a very much a cultural difference, and I like to say it. This is like so 18th century where we are. We need to kind of understand and look to another path.
You know, one of the statistics that raises eyebrows is the a statistic about the countries that are actually doing executions at the same rate as the United States. So in 2015, only China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan performed more executions than the United States. Those are the only countries. More people were executed in the U.S. than in Iraq, North Korea, Yemen, or Somalia. And, you know, when we talk about democracy and the spread of democracy, those are some of the countries that we point to as barbaric and countries that don't treat their citizens to a level that we would like. And we are in horrible company when it comes to these executions.
Okay. We have a little over 5 minutes. I'd just like to ask each of you to think for a second about, you know, this is an opportunity. This is it's on the table now. It's right in front of us. People are paying attention. What would you like to say about this that you think would have a lasting effect based on the circumstances that we're looking at right here in Arkansas right now? What is it about this, the process, the questions, the procedures, the way it's been handled, that you think is both perhaps unique but also a bit horrifying to have to deal with on this issue, and why this is so getting so much attention from across the globe? John?
You watch old video of Iraq. Or am I thinking of Iran? Iran, I guess, where they used to hang people from cranes. People in business suits were hung, and they leave the body dangling. Yet here, it gets out in the national media, the international media, that Wendy Kelly has to go to the Rotary Club and ask for volunteers to come and watch the execution because they are required to have a certain statutory number watch them putting somebody to death. And these are supposedly independents, not the defense counsel for the defendant. The family of the defendant can be there if they want, but they usually don't. The families of the victims can be there, but they watch by video from a different room. They're not even in the same room. There's a video camera that hangs down from the ceiling for them to watch without being with everybody else, because they're going to go through a different process of grieving. The others are just there to look. And the last one I had three or four of the police officers that were involved in it. Just had to come and see the end of their job, I guess. And that was a death volunteer who was put to death within 20 months of the trial. Mm. And less than 2.5 years from the murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wanted to be put to death. It started out as a suicide. It failed. And said, told the jury, I tried to commit suicide. I failed. You can go ahead and finish it for me.
Right.
So the jury obliged her, and that's what happened.
Right.
And it's hard to represent a death volunteer because they're so set on doing it.
Right.
And they don't want it to stop. Like, which one is our death volunteer this time? Is it Jones?
Yes.
Jack Jones.
Jack Jones.
But it's going on for 20 years with him. But now he's at the point that death row wears on you. It just wears you down to a nub. And you're going through this emotional trauma. How much longer do I have?
Right.
And, of course, the public thinks, well, he's on death row, he killed somebody, he deserves that psychological trauma, but that's part of what they go through, and the cruelness and unusualness. And then when you get to the penalty being imposed in the execution chamber, then it becomes painful as hell.
Right. Thanks, John.
Aside, along with the victims' families, one group of people that I want us to not forget are corrections officers that are tasked with carrying out these executions. They didn't sign up for this. You know, we have people in very small towns that are working hard to support their families, and they didn't sign up to actually kill 8 individuals in 10 days, even when our governor has signed these death warrants, but has made it a point to tell Arkansans he doesn't think it's appropriate for him to be present while this is taking place. So I just want to make sure that we keep our corrections officers in our thoughts and our prayers while all of this is taking place.
All right. Good thought.
Well, Wendy Kelly is going to be the one in the room to read the death warrant, because that's when I did my two. Larry Norris was the director of the Department of Corrections. He reads the death warrant and asks if you have any last words. And Norris respected the solemnity of what he was doing. I mean, you could tell he did not like being there.
Yeah.
But it's his job. He had to go through with it and do the legal formalities of addressing the inmate on the table already strapped down. I mean, when I have the client, they say, okay, it's time to go in the room, and they take them away from you. And then you go out, and they drive you around, and I don't know why they drive you. You could have walked around to the room where the actual execution is going to occur, where you see it. And then the inmate suddenly appears laying strapped down to the table. And they use, I guess, their SWORT team, the guys that are as big as the pro football players in case the inmate struggles. Right. I don't think I've not heard of any in Arkansas that ever did, but in case they fight them to go on the table. But they're, by the time the curtain opens, the inmate's strapped down, looking sort of biblical with arms out, like on a cross, but laying down, covered by a sheet, and all you could see is the face. The needle's already in, and it's just waiting for the introduction of the drugs.
Anybody else have any closing comments or thoughts about this? Anything you want to say in closing to the audience?
Well, you said what we would say to, I think, have an impact. The thing that looms so large for me is the company that we're in. We like to talk about these other countries that are so, so barbaric, and we're right in there with them, the countries that Furanda named.
Right, right.
And one last thought, if anybody is going to protest, the Department of Corrections uses the state police to set up a roadblock at the Cummins unit so people can't get in past the certain point. There's no point in protesting there. TV stations will be there, but there's no point in protesting there. You're better off to do it some more public place, like in front of the governor's mansion.
We have learned that from past experience.
All right. I want to thank all of my guests, Reverend Ruskin Falls, pastor at Pulaski Heights, Furanda Bradfield, the director of the Arkansas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, Judith Elaine, a family member, and John Hall, a criminal defense attorney. We appreciate your calls. Stay tuned next week. We'll be, you want to say something? Real
sure.
Quick,
I just wanted to point out that anyone that wants more information about the death penalty and in Arkansas and ways that you can participate, or if you have questions that you need answered about the death penalty, please visit our website. It's www.arkansasabolish.org. That's www.arkansasabolish.org.
Thank you. All right, next week we'll be talking about the healthcare system. We'll have folks dealing with children and families and discussing what's going on in healthcare. It's a big issue for Arkansas. And again, thank you for listening to KABF Speak Up Arkansas. Stay tuned for Radio Cows. You're listening to KABF 88.3.
KABF Community Radio 88.3 Little Rock. We come to you in many languages and cultures, presenting shows and programs in various arts and craft disciplines. Kind of song to make you try, 'cause I would say. 'Cause I'm playing snoop and swallowing on songs from Jamaica.